Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. One of the most important aspects of planning for our community's future is to understand the present. Today's show is to talk a little bit about a tool that's been made available through the Community Foundation for SLO County. My guests are Janice Fong-Wolf, Director of Grants and Programs for the Community Foundation SLO County, and a member of Action for a Healthy Community Steering Committee, and Jeff Legato, Mapping and Graphics Specialist for San Luis Obispo County Planning Department, and also a member of the Action for a Healthy Community Steering Committee. Thank you both for joining me today.
Well, thank you for having us.
You know, and I think, Janice, probably the first thing that would be really helpful is to talk about how, you know, what the role is that the Community Foundation plays in this and how this even came to be.
Absolutely. Well, the Community Foundation has been around for about 15 years. We are a nonprofit entity, and our main purpose is to work with donors in our community to realize their charitable goals by connecting philanthropy with local nonprofits. And when you do something like that, you want to really have a good understanding of what the community needs are. And this report is a very dense report that's full of good information across seven broad arenas of quality of life in our county. So it's very relevant for us to have that information, and we've been involved with it for about the past 10 years.
Okay, and Jeff is a member of the steering committee, I mean, planning department and mapping and all of that.
Right.
That seems like doing this would maybe be a great fit, but I'm not really sure how you got here.
Well, it is a good fit, actually, and I was kind of introduced to this by Jamie Lopes, who used to work in the planning department, and he retired, and he got me involved in it kind of as a replacement, I guess. But it's actually turned out to be a really nice fit, bringing, you know, I come from a planning background, planning perspective. I have a degree from Cal Poly in planning, but my main charge right now at the county is to work with the geographic information systems, the GIS systems. It's a database, digital mapping, very technical.
Right.
And this group here, you know, putting together this report is very data intensive. So it's nice to be on this committee and kind of have that background.
Yeah. And I think, you know, what we often had before that, individual nonprofits or entities that were looking for this kind of information were really tasked with going out and pulling all this data together for themselves.
Right.
So this is kind of members are on the steering committee, Janice?
Yeah, you bet. You know, the history behind Action for Healthy Communities and the creation of this report is that back in 1998, there was a need for a community needs assessment. Actually, it was French Hospital when they moved over into nonprofit status, and they recognized that they couldn't do it by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And also, doing this kind of report is actually kind of costly. It costs about almost $100,000 to really do a statistically valid report representing all of the county's residents. So many organizations also had that same need and desire but couldn't afford it on their own.
Right.
So many organizations came together. Some of the county departments also had the need, local nonprofits, the hospitals, and even some of the businesses locally who would find this information very valuable. So we all came together and worked with a contractor who does this type of report all across the nation and created the very first one back in 1998. And we've done this is our sixth report. So we do it every 2 to 3 years. And it's just been extremely valuable. And one of the things I love most about it is about the ability to track trends over time on the various data points.
On the report, Jeff, are you, when you're talking about tracking, so you're really going back and revisiting some of the same data that has been evaluated in prior years.
Right. Yeah. It's excuse me. It's very important to have a history kind of the same question being asked over and over, and that way you can track the trends of how the county is responding to that question. Correct.
Okay. And I want to remind anybody listening to today's show, too, that we're going to be really open to your questions and your comments. And you can call and join our conversation today by calling in at 781-3875. And please do use that phone number. Janice, with this report, how have you gone about gathering this data? I mean,
I have to say, before working at the Community Foundation and becoming involved with this report, I wasn't that familiar with how rigorous the process can be if you want a statistically valid report.
And what does that mean when you say statistically valid?
Well, basically, that we really are getting a good representation of the county. The contractor that we hire each time we do this report, their charge is to make sure that they get enough respondents from all over the county, from different age populations, demographic levels like income status, marital status, just all the different factors, so that we really are looking at a cross-section of our community and getting their response and being able then also to look at it from a sub-region level too. So we're getting enough respondents that we can say, okay, for the county, this is a really true representation of the opinions of our residents. And then they can also break it down by, you know, seniors or parents or subregions like North County and South County and that sort of thing. So that's very important. And that we consistently ask the questions the same way each time so that we can compare.
Every 3 years,
right.
You mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
So that way we know, okay, this was asked the same way, so you can compare the reaction of the population at that time versus, you know, now.
Yeah. And when you're talking about, I mean, the Action for Healthy Communities, just that title implies that you're looking at the total health. So the health includes what, Jeff? What kinds of health?
Well, there's like a holistic kind of approach to planning for a community. You know, people might say health, and we have a whole chapter dedicated to health, which is probably the biggest chapter, but that's more healthcare related, you know,
right.
And then mental health and stuff like that. Healthy communities, I think from a planning perspective, we would interpret that to be, you know, a community that is healthy by, you know, having everything it needs, like parks and services that people would require to be healthy. So, you know, if you have a community that doesn't have any parks or people having to drive everywhere to get anything, that's not a healthy community. You know?
Right.
It's not a whole community. So if you're you want to have a community where people feel at home and safe and secure, and that goes to, you know, just their personal well-being, but also their jobs, the air they breathe, the water they drink, all that.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Right. And that's kind of why the report is divided up into 7 different chapters. We have one that addresses the physical environment, a chapter on the social environment, health, like Jeff said, education, the economy, public safety, and basic needs. And because all those hopefully are working well and in balance, so
right.
that we do have
right.
a strong quality of life for our residents.
And then if they're not, if you're finding that there are areas of deficit,
mm-hmm.
then those are areas that can help service groups, organizations.
Absolutely.
Start to target.
Absolutely.
In the community.
Yeah, and that's kind of why the name of the group that formed, this collaborative that formed to do this quality of life indicator study, what they really wanted to sort of say, okay, now you got the data, you've got
right.
good data, and hopefully you use it for planning purposes, program planning. Doesn't matter who you are, that there's ways that this could impact the work that you do and help provide guidance.
I think the thing that I was most, because I've used the report for years mm-hmm. in work that I've done, and the thing that has always appealed to me about it is how user-friendly it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks as though a real effort went into creating something that comes out in a way that you don't have to have a planning degree
right.
in order to
mm-hmm.
understand.
Mm-hmm.
You
mm-hmm.
don't have to have a statistical analysis background
right.
to be able to really get a picture of. And is that, I'm assuming that's with intent.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, there's two main components to the report. There's what's called the primary data, which is actually a survey of our residents, and it's just asking their opinions and their personal experiences. So
that's really subjective.
Exactly. Exactly. But I think it's everything that people can relate to. You know, what is the most concerning topic or issue for you in your community? And, you know, we have a prioritization of what people have responded to, you know, growth, you know, water currently right now is a really hot topic.
Right.
So those are the kinds of things that we get feedback from. And I think that's helpful and useful to anybody in the business sector, in the government sector, and certainly for nonprofits, as far as where they're going to focus their efforts.
And then in that report, are those answers, I think you said they're broken down by age group.
Yes, there is. In the report, there are graphs that respond to those questions, and then there's also lovely appendices. It's a rather lengthy report, but you can actually, you know, dig in and look at the raw data and then be able to parse that information out. And we also have it broken out by the four geographic regions of the county.
Jeff, how accessible is this data? How do people get it?
Okay, it's actually really accessible. It's there's a website called actionslow.org.
Mm-hmm.
So action and then SLO, no spaces or anything. So if you can download the full report there or each section, and there's also a link to the archived reports from there as well.
Okay. And if someone isn't computer literate, if they can't download it, how else could they get it?
You can get a hard copy, and Janice can explain
okay.
how to get that.
So by calling you, Janice?
Yes, if they just contact us at the Community Foundation, and the phone number there is 543-2323, and they can just ask for me, and I can get them a copy of it, no problem.
Okay. And back reports are available, too, if
yes.
somebody wanted to have that. So let's talk a little bit about the report,
okay.
about what you found with the report. Anything that really surprised you, Jeff, in the report?
Well, you know, from a planning perspective, there were some things. And I have the report
here. I love planners because I'm looking at Jeff and he's got it like all nicely tabbed with
yes.
yellow. And I'm sure yellow and red
nice.
Means something different. And
they do.
I think that is so cool.
I'm glad
I
to live up to
that.
The stereotype.
I love it. You don't have the pocket protector, but you know,
I did
working,
carry my pencil in
carry...
my pocket. Yeah, it's true. I have it with me here.
You are so adorable.
Thank you. So, yeah, I've actually tabbed across the top
yes,
here some things we could discuss today. And I know Janice has some things on
great.
Her mind, too. Maybe I'll do one and I don't know. We
that sounds great.
But so, you know, looking from a perspective, the first thing, one of the things that stood out, there were a bunch of things that stood out. This report's great. But the first thing was that our changing demographics and the age groups. So, you know, this report asks how old the person is when they respond. And we have that same question over the time. So we've got starting in 2006 to 2012, and the 35 to 59-year-olds has gone down. And you can probably guess what went up.
The economy went.
Well, the elderly
population
is
went
growing.
Up.
Yeah. So the 60 years and above has gone up. It's still, when we started the report in 06, there were almost 19% of the people were in that age bracket, 70 mm-hmm. or 60 and above. And now it's 23.5.
Okay.
So that's a pretty significant increase.
So does that imply that they've gotten older
yeah.
and moved in, but you're not seeing that age group moving in?
Well, that age group is there are more people responding to our survey that fit that age bracket,
yeah.
which means there are more of them here.
Yeah, okay.
And in the 35 to 59-year-old, you know, we started at 35% in 06, and now they're at 30.6%.
Wow.
And the other age brackets have stayed the same.
Okay.
So that's an interesting thing that yeah. jumps out from a planning perspective. You know, we are having an elderly population. And when you look at the U.S. Census, the same data is presented there. So this reaffirms that.
Right, right. It's us baby boomers, Jeff.
Yeah, it's baby boomers. Yeah. You guys are starting to...
We are starting to get older. And you notice like that he said, he looked at me and said, you guys.
You know. I fall in that
sorry.
Category, too.
Yeah.
It's okay, Jeff.
I'm sorry.
I own that. I do. I own that.
Well, it's my parents, and, you know, they're not – you're actually much younger than my parents. And
no,
I think
I'm not,
those are the,
Jeff, but thank you. That's kind.
You appear that way. You know. I better stop
you
talking.
Yeah, you saved yourself.
I'm going to to get you out of that.
Thank you.
I'm going to do a really quick break and remind everybody that you're listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX Radio 90.1. I'm talking with Janice Fong Wolf, who's Director of Grants and Programs for the Community Foundation San Luis Obispo County, and Jeff Legato, Mapping and Graphic Specialist for San Luis Obispo County Planning Department and a member of the Action for Healthy Community Steering Committee. Please be a part of today's conversation by bringing your voice into the discussion by simply calling us at 781-3875. Lots of data in this report. We're going to be talking about it in just a moment. But if you've got questions about some of what may be in the report, please do call in and ask those questions. And so, Jeff, what else?
Back
to you, Jeff.
Sure. I'll throw out another one. The building permit information, this report tracks building permit information, and just looking at that over time, this report actually shows it from 2000, because that's something you just call and get from the planning departments.
Right.
That's not something that the survey would incorporate, but this report includes it, which is an example of secondary data sources that are used within this report.
Good point.
And this report has tons of secondary data sources as well. And just looking at that data, you know, we peaked out, it's really easy to see in this chart, we peaked out at 2004. So total county permits in 2004 was 2,263. And, you know, that was the boom, the housing boom. That was like the peak. And
right.
Then it just starts dropping dramatically.
Even
that.
Before the recession.
Yeah, that would the peak in building permit activity was 2004. And it was high in 2003 and 2002 and 2001 and even relatively high in 2000. And then so you see this lump where it just goes up, 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 and then it just drops, and that was the recession, and that drops in 2005, 2006, 2007, dropping 2008, 2009, and then today it just dropped, and it kind of bottomed out in 2011 at 293. So that's like, you know, a tenfold drop.
Yeah.
So, you know, to go from 2263 to 293 in what, seven? You know, not that long a time. That's, you know, that so much of our economy is dependent on the construction and homes and real estate, and that's a huge hit.
You know?
So we as a county, or as a nation actually, you know, absorbed that. And now we're just now starting to see an increase. So now in 2012, we had 366.
Wow.
So it's just now starting to kind of, you know, come up a little.
And that's, you know, and you pointed out as secondary data, something really important in this report that is really nice about it is that you have the survey data that were the questionnaires and the surveys where you sent it out. People responded in writing. They responded verbally and phone calls.
It's primarily done via phone calls.
Okay.
So they do what's called a random digit dial survey so that they're, again, trying to make sure they cover the breadth. There's no, you know, targeting of a specific population. And so that happens. And there was 1,102 of those telephone surveys. And
wow.
They did include cell phones, which, of course.
I was going to ask that. So it did.
Yeah, because okay. That definitely is a movement now where a lot of people don't
own a landline.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So that includes cell phones. So we do, again, have a good representation of our community. Then there actually were some targeted face-to-face surveys with populations that might not have access to phones, specifically homeless population.
Okay.
And then also monolingual Spanish-speaking folks who may be less likely to respond to a telephone call. So we do have actually that data as well. And for me, one of the most interesting data points was a survey question about do you have at least $300 savings in your account? And, you know, the general population as a whole, I still even think that number is surprising, but the general population is about 77% say they at least have $300 in their savings account. Well, that still means that 23% don't.
Right.
Which is kind of scary if
right.
you think about that.
Right.
But then when you look at the Spanish-speaking or monolingual Spanish-speaking, it drops significantly down to 36%.
That had the $300.
They just have the $300.
What
so there's a lot of people living on the edge.
What about seniors? Was there any difference in seniors and non-seniors?
You know, I didn't pull that out to look at it specifically. But again, as I said, we do have in the appendices
right.
a breakdown of the respondents to each of the questions by their age group.
And I think the thing that is just really useful about this tool is what Jeff was saying, mm-hmm. also about the data that you were pulling about permits that were pulled. That's secondary data that comes from another source. Mm-hmm. If I were trying to look into doing, say, a grant, or I was looking at whether I'm going to increase my services for a program or offer mm-hmm. new programs or services, and I needed to pull information, if this report, the vital signs report, didn't exist, I would have to personally pull or have someone pull that data from all
research
of these projects. Different services.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'd have to pull data from the planning department. I would have to pull. I'd have to go to the GIS survey. Yeah. Is that GIS? Is it available for the general public
yeah.
to use?
Actually, the San Luis Obispo County has a very sophisticated interactive GIS website.
Okay,
it's slowplanning.org/. Permit view map.
Okay.
And you can get there from the planning department homepage, slowplanning.org. There was a link there as well. It doesn't have this kind of information,
right.
but it does have it's a wealth of resource. Realtors use it all the time. People researching property, whatnot.
Right.
There's links to assessor's parcel maps.
Right.
You can check all kinds of stuff. That's a whole other topic. I could go on for hours on that.
And that may be another show.
Yeah, it may be, yeah.
But, you know, and in this report, too, then you've got a listing of where secondary data came from.
Mm-hmm.
So if, say, someone wanted to go to the planning department and went, wow, I didn't know they had that, or
right.
I'd like a lot more detail on that, this particular report has links that direct you right into that.
Absolutely. We found that to be really valuable. You know, one of the things that we do with the report is we repeat it every 3 years.
Right.
So sometimes when you do that, data can get old pretty quick. So we wanted to make sure that folks, even though they saw the data point as we captured it in 2013, that they could then in 2015 say, oh, okay, this is how I can find that information and get the most current version of it.
Right.
So we wanted, again, to keep this a very lively resource for the community.
Okay. Can we go back to another one of your tabs, Jeff?
Yeah, sure. Okay. Let's see. I pull the next tab here. Taxable sales. There was interesting, because this goes down by jurisdiction. So we've got taxable sales. And I noticed everything since 2005 has gone down, with the exception, or every community, and this list community is like Rio Grande, Atascadero, Grover Beach, Morro Bay, et cetera. So a lot of them experienced a decline in taxable sales, mainly because of the recession. But one community, or a few, but mostly notably would be Pismo Beach, which experienced an increase. And, you know, why is that? That's interesting to me that happened.
I don't know.
Who knows? Yeah, I mean, well, I would imagine it'd be that there, you know, Pismo Beach economy is more of a people go there to vacation.
Yeah.
So
that's interesting because you would think that as a destination, a lot of the other
communities
here also, though, would be destination.
They are, and I would think, you know, just recently, like Paso Robles. And there's some more data in here, like the transient occupancy tax, where Paso Robles actually showed a significant increase in transient occupancy tax, TOT, that's collected. That's like they call it a bed tax. People
right.
pay to stay in a hotel. There's some taxes that go to the community that you're in. Paso Robles went up 100%.
Really?
Yeah.
That much?
And that's in here, yeah. And I think, you know, it's just the wine industry
right.
is growing. And there's other data in here related to the wine industry as well.
And, you know, data like that, too, is, you know, it's probably a way that in this community to look at things like that and go, okay, so what do you think they could have done, say, in Paso Robles that was successful
mm-hmm.
to drive that? I mean,
mm-hmm.
maybe it's an anomaly and just unique to that area, but maybe it's something that's repeatable.
Yeah, well, there's probably some marketing
area.
Efforts that happened. Yeah.
Right, mm-hmm. right. And being able to replicate some of that in other communities.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah. Continue?
Yeah, please.
Do you want to give Janice a
no,
chance?
No, it is.
I'm going to give Janice.
What's great is that when Jeff
it's the same report, Jeff.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. we queued in. Well, that was so fascinating. Before the show, we were talking, and we both queued in on completely different data points within
did
the
you
report.
Really?
Absolutely.
That's
absolutely.
Wonderful.
So that's why I'm going to give Janice a chance to
I'm
talk.
I'm going to give Janice a chance,
okay.
I promise.
We got time, I guess. Let's see what else. Transportation to school.
Interesting.
This report questions people, and this is a direct, let me move my move my drink here. This is a drink of water, by the way. I never know. This is a chance to, this is highlight that we can highlight here how this report goes out and gets, you know, primary data. This is people responding to the phone survey. So driven to school was really interesting. It's gone up overall.
Of people being driven to school?
Right. And this question was started asking in 2010, I think.
Yes, I believe
And because that's the first number I see here. And then more recently, so in 2010, overall, countywide, 60.5% of respondents said that they are driven or drive their children to school. And now it's 65.5. So that's going up. And from a healthy community's perspective, you want to encourage physical activity. And walking to school is healthy.
Yeah.
Or riding your bike.
Yeah,
it's much more healthy than being driven around. And, you know, why are we as a county driving more to school?
Right.
There's some reason there. And, you know, maybe this report can kind of highlight that. But I don't know. I think that to me, it's crying for some more analysis to figure out what's going on.
That's a really interesting point. And I wouldn't have cued in on that like you. But, it really does speak to the fact of, What is that about, that we're now driving our kids two blocks rather than having them hoof it?
Yeah.
You know, what?
And some other things that are interesting, like in the North Coast, we have this portion's broken down by geographic region. So in the North Coast in 2010, it was 60.6, and in 2013, it was 44.9. So North Coast.
So more kids in the North Coast are walking.
Right. So there's something happened there where they're walking. But then you look at, in San Luis Obispo, for instance, which is kind of the central region of the county. We call it San Luis Obispo, but it's more of just city and then surrounding area around San Luis Obispo city. It went from 42% in 2010 to 60.5% in 2013.
Where was this?
In SLO.
In San Luis Obispo.
San Luis Obispo
city
area.
Is
well,
where you can literally walk from one end of the town to the other.
Right.
Yeah. 20 minutes or so. You could.
Interesting.
Yeah. That what is going on? Maybe the city can look at this data and start figuring out a program or policy or something they could create to encourage people to or help with this. And I think they have, because on Los Osos Valley Road, they just put in not too long ago, a really wide bike lane walkway, if you're familiar with City of SLO.
Yes.
And that just went in. And I think that's kind of a direct response to make kids feel safer. Like, here's a really wide walkway. Even though Los Osos Valley Road is busy, here's a really safe area where the kids can ride their bike or walk to school.
Right.
I see kids use that all the time.
Yeah. Interesting. And Janice, you keyed in on very different areas than Jeff did.
I think, because of the nature of the foundation and that we really look at a lot of the work, the mission of various nonprofit organizations, I tend to focus in on things that we might be able to influence by funding programs.
Yes.
And so that's why the information about the savings was so important to me, because that tells us that we really need to do a lot more financial literacy training in our community, helping people to understand why it's important to have savings and maybe helping them to figure out how to build that up. And we recognize, I think, oftentimes that many people are living on the edge, that they are one paycheck away from,
homeless.
Yeah, homelessness. I mean, to be dramatic, but that is true in some cases.
Yeah.
So when you see a figure like that, when you see that significant, I mean, a quarter, basically, of our population does not have $300 in savings.
Yeah.
Something needs to be done there. We need to, we need to work with people. And that is a higher percentage than those who are considered living in poverty, because the percentage living in poverty is more like 13%. So even people who are not technically living at poverty level also are financially on the edge.
Right. So, that could also speak to the fact that you have a significant number of people that reside in community like San Luis Obispo, where it is there's a significant cost to live here.
Absolutely.
And the incomes are not necessarily high in a lot of industries to support that. So it's an on the edge. You know,
you're
essentially covering your monthly costs.
Absolutely.
To live here.
One of the other data points that I cued in on related somewhat to this is the percentage of household income being spent on actual housing. And the standard or the recommendation overall is it should be one third or less than one third of your income is spent on housing. Whereas we can see that the renters locally have a very significant proportion. I think it was around 65% actually are spending more than one third of their income on their housing. So that speaks to the very thing you were saying.
Yeah.
The affordability is a factor.
Yeah. Yeah. And was there a pretty even breakdown of ages for this survey?
Yes. Again, part of working with a contracting firm to do this, they make sure that they have a representative sample of the different ages. So we interview people 18 and above, obviously, but we want to make sure that we have parents who have children in different age populations as well.
Yes.
So, well, we have the data of 1,102 survey respondents. In essence, they surveyed way more people in order to make sure that they had that sampling representative.
Okay. And that kind of then takes away the argument of, well, yeah, but how many Cal Poly students did you interview who may not have $300 in a savings account because they're not doing that?
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And we had a caller who wanted to add that more parents may be driving their children to school because in 2010 or 2011, a bus charge of about $1 a child per day was instated for Lucia Mar School District.
Yeah.
So that would be in South County, but that wouldn't speak to the North Coast.
Actually, I think the San Luis Obispo Unified actually increased their bus fees as well. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So
that could,
it
could.
Okay. So that could be a big point to take. That,
exactly.
You know, if we're talking about families living on the edge, a dollar a day is, you know, that's important to note. And thank you for whoever that caller was for bringing that to our attention.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's great. And, you know, that's the beauty of this kind of a report is that it's a report. It's data driven, but there's so much more to add to it.
Right.
And do you capture more information as you go through the 3 years?
Yeah, absolutely. With the last report, which was done in 2010, we recognize that you're exactly right. There's a lot more out there. It almost begs questions. You know, well, why is this? I mean, it's interesting. It's a highlight, but why is this? And then the so what we've done is that we created six different folios after the last report, and we will be doing the same thing following this report. Last time we talked about healthy community development. We did a folio specifically about seniors and their quality of life in our community. We talked about actually economic stressors and social stressors. So because we were right smack dab following the big recession, we wanted to see, was there a link? And definitely there was a link with folks who were having, you know, economic issues and then seeing increases in drinking and in smoking.
Yes.
So those have implications for health.
Yeah.
So there's a lot, there is a lot of interconnection. And again, one of the things I love about this report is that all of the data is right there in front of you.
Right.
And it's all in one place.
Right.
So you can start to sort of connect the dots.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, and she mentioned folios. And the folios is an interesting aspect of this report because the folios aren't included in the original report. Those are developed after the report's been released.
After the data's been released.
Right. So we've got we've had one folio completed, and we're in the process of completing more. And they give you a chance to take this data and investigate a little deeper.
And really drill down.
Yeah. So maybe in the folio that would look at something like school, walking to school rates, there may be an opportunity there to kind of dig for an explanation.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. You are listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX Radio, streaming worldwide on the web at www.kcbx.org. I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. Janice Fong Wolf and Jeff Legato are both members of the Action for Healthy Community Steering Committee, and they're with me today. We've been talking about Vital Signs, the newest edition of the Action for Healthy Communities data report about the state of health in San Luis Obispo County. If you have comments or questions about today's topic, we'd love to add your voice to the conversation. Just call us at 781-3875. And Janice, so what else did you did
well,
kind of pique your interest?
Unlike Jeff, I didn't tab everything. I just
you're
scribbled.
You're very different
yes.
people. And that's what makes the world so special.
I scribbled notes that maybe I won't be able to even read anymore because my handwriting is so bad. But anyway, one of the things, again, from the Community Foundation's perspective, we have been very active in an early literacy initiative ever since 2003, where we encourage children 0 to 5 and the parents of children 0 to 5 to read to their children. And we have a program called Raising a Reader. It's in 17 different community sites throughout our county, and we're going to hopefully be adding more in the future. But one of the things that is asked in the survey is about whether or not you as a parent read to your child, and how frequently do you read to your child. So in 2013, we actually had 82% of the families reading to their children anywhere between 3 to 7 times a week, which is awesome.
It is awesome.
And so, you know, hopefully that's an indicator that it's increasing because of the types of programs that we're supporting from the Community Foundation. And actually the reason behind that initiative was to address the achievement gap. We know that, you know, the local school districts are fabulous, and we have very successful students, and we score very high on the various tests. However, when you break out lower-income families and families where English is not their first language, that they tend to have lower scores overall.
Right.
And so that is the achievement gap. But what we're seeing, wonderfully, is that in 2013, third graders, which is a critical time to measure whether or not they're going to be successful in school, that the language arts has definitely improved significantly within those two populations, the low-income population and the Spanish-speaking population.
And that's data that's coming from the schools?
Yes.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so we have, again, a combination of the survey question,
right,
you're getting
which
from
says,
parents.
Are you reading to
right.
your children?
And then the second question, which is data coming from schools, demonstrating, oh, yes, there is an improvement. So from our perspective, that's a great investment to create this initiative and to continue to support it and fund it in our community.
Yeah, and absolutely encouragement for continuance of that behavior and for the other 20%
absolutely.
To pick that up. That's great.
Yeah.
And we're going to take a call.
Okay.
Pete, are you there?
Yes.
Hi, you have a question or comment?
Yeah, my interest was really sparked when you talked about the parents driving kids to school.
Yes.
I live in a neighborhood where there's a grammar school, and I remember years and years ago, my neighborhood used to have a lot of kids, and there would be gangs of them roaming around after school every day, and a lot of them would end up at my house because I have a lot of fun stuff to play with. For probably 15 years now, it's like there was a neutron bomb or something. The kids are gone.
Huh.
There are no kids. I never see any kids. I walk a lot because I have dogs. I walk early when kids are going to school. And if I see a kid on the sidewalk or on a bike, I'm just, like, shocked.
Yeah.
There are many ramifications of this. For one thing, I think our society, instead of all members of our society, in all sectors of society, you know, walking in restaurants everywhere. And, of course, the kids aren't getting exercise. But there's also the congestion and the pollution of this incredible traffic jam around that grammar school now twice a day.
Yeah.
And the cars sitting idling, and sometimes there's disputes over parking and access to the kids. And it's really like, God, this society is really terrible. I don't know where all the kids are. I guess they're inside playing Nintendo.
Yeah, probably.
But it's not playing.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It's a cacophony of problems. It's really, really bad.
Yeah. It's interesting that you've noted that. There are points of the report, like Jeff said, that kind of pick up gee, what's happening here? And kind of note that there is a change in a lot of things.
Society has changed. You know, when I grew up, you know, we moved in. My dad was fortunate enough to be able to afford a new home, and our neighborhood was full of kids. We were all new families, and there's a couple neighborhoods like that in SLO
right
now.
Mm-hmm.
But I go back to visit, and no kids.
You know,
I think it reflects this aging population, in a sense. You know, for that may be one of the reasons, because people, you know, have bought the home and they haven't bought another one. They're just there, and the kids have, you know, grown up and moved on. So these neighborhoods do change over time.
It would be interesting as a data point too. I think along that line, as we're seeing some of this data of taking a look in the future of maybe asking the questions related to, you know, parents having their children play in other ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it seems like there is this trend for get your kid on a soccer team or a baseball team, or, you know, we used to play in neighborhoods and we play with our neighbors and we free played.
Right.
We didn't have to go to dance and on
Tuesday
and then on Thursday and then on, you know, my mother didn't have the time to drive me around from one place to another, but, you know, it's a different kind of social environment.
It is a different culture. And actually, as the caller was talking, I started pulling out some data here. We did ask about how much time youth spend in exercise per week, physical activity. And then we also asked about screen time. So that means being on the computer, watching television.
Or on their telephone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, on their smartphones. And then also in looking at video games. So that has definitely been an increase over time. Screen time in 2010, there was a 7% increase since 2010 in this last report. So that is definitely a significant change in behavior. I don't think anybody's surprised by that data point, but it just confirms what Pete was experiencing, is that they're inside.
Right.
And what you're saying about physical activity, we do see that there is a strong level of participation in physical activity, at least 10 hours a week. However, it is more in structured types of activities versus, you know, playing out in the cul-de-sac like we used to do.
Right. We were lucky if we had cul-de-sacs. Those were the coolest
places. You can run over, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, thank you very much, Pete.
Thank you. Bye.
Giselle, you had a question or comment?
Yes, I did have a couple of comments. I think this report looks really good. I mean, it's attempting to do a lot. It does cover a lot of local statistics and puts it in a very readable format. But because I live in Oceano, I've got a real... I have to raise a couple of issues with your Oceano statistics.
Okay.
And I think this is a common problem when anybody collects statistics is, you know, you have to know how accurate your source is. So, for example, I had to laugh when I saw that Oceano residents pay an average of $31 for their water bills. I don't know if that was, they said monthly or bi-monthly, but I know that my water bill, and it's half of the base rate. I mean, I pay for 6 units, which is about 4,000 gallons of water every 2 months. I only use about 3 units, so that would be 2,000 gallons every 2 months. And my bill is over $100. It's about $101. And I've spoken to families in Oceano where their bills are regularly in the $400 range. So, you know, the water issue is a major issue, and the cost of water, because that's one statistic I'm glad you're keeping an eye on. But how, you know, where do you get some of these statistics? So just using Oceano as an example, do you go directly to the general manager and ask, or do you go through planning department statistics?
Jeff has that page tabbed, yeah, so he can speak to that.
Yeah, I think it's page 188.
I see your statistic here. And it looks to me that the source for that was the San Luis Obispo County Department of Planning and Building, the annual summary report. And I believe we get that data, although I'm not 100% certain, but I believe it comes from calling the CSDs and asking them what the average bill cost was. And so,
they could write a weekly TV series about Luciano Community Services District.
Yeah.
That's a whole different show, Giselle.
Yeah.
You know, it begs for community input. Your community is as good as your inhabitants, you know, make it.
Right.
Everybody should contribute at least an hour a day of community service. But
that'd
the
be
other
great
thing is the building. The number of buildings that were reported for Oceano. I think last year I sat in on one meeting in 2012 where they had six permits issued or six houses built. It may be that the permits were issued in one year and the houses didn't get
correct
built,
yeah,
until the next.
Yeah, that's often the case. The permit will get issued and there's a lag between, well, there has to be a lag because you can't start construction without a, you're not supposed to start construction without a permit. So you get your permit, you start your construction, and all kinds of things can affect when that's completed. Yeah.
Now, I've got one more suggestion, and I'll get off the phone. But when you were talking about how you do random digit calling and you help collect statistics that way, do you have or is it even reasonable or viable to also provide a space on the website where people could fill in statistics, you know, as they hit the website? Or do you find that maybe that's not accurate?
Well, thanks, Giselle. I'm really glad that you actually brought that up. Following this report, our committee, we meet monthly, and we actually did talk about how can we keep the community engaged in providing us information. And that was actually one of the suggestions, is to have a little mini survey place where folks can log in and share their viewpoints and share information from their personal experiences. Because, you know, we do this once every 3 years, but definitely, you know, things change over time. So that is something that we're talking about doing, and hopefully we'll be able to pursue that. We were just talking about that last month, so great question.
And Giselle, how did you access the report? Did you go online and get it?
I did. I listened to Democracy Now!, which is how I discovered your program, because it follows Democracy Now!. And then when I was listening to you, you gave clear information about how to navigate to actionslow.org. And then the links were very easy to find, the link to download the full report or to break it down, like the health
right
section is a show in itself. I mean,
yeah.
Just today, I found out that the Civil Rights Department within the Department of Social Services, I believe every department has its own Office of Civil Rights, they're actually going to investigate a complaint of a civil right violation in the Department of Social Services, but it relates a lot to procedure. It really relates a lot to their record keeping, and the accuracy of record keeping, and that is another show in itself.
Yeah,
because the records will contribute eventually. I'm sure, you know, county maintained records are going to contribute to the accuracy, and the effectiveness of the statistics that you're collecting and putting in this fantastic report.
Right.
Great.
What I love is that you went to the website, you got the information, you were interested in your community and looking at it, and you're doing exactly what I think the Action for Healthy Community Steering Committee was hoping people in the community, not only organizations and service groups, but also general citizens would do, which is to look at things that interest them in the report. And then if they had questions or concerns or recommendations, to find a way to get that feedback back because it only makes the report better. So
you
are a poster child today, Giselle. Thank you for that.
Still practicing.
Okay.
By
well,
the
good
way, I'm looking for a job. You know, you're the one at the top in San Luis Obispo. So anybody out there, I'll work for $10 an hour.
Thanks.
Anyway.
Bye, Janelle. Good luck with your job hunt.
Keep up the excellent work.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
That's great. I hope she finds a job.
Yeah. I hope so, too.
Yeah,
she
and,
does
you
her
know,
homework, obviously.
Right. Well, she mentioned about data collection or data at the county specifically. And, you know, don't get me started. Working at the county, I'm from a data background. You know, that's my gig is data. And I struggle, you know, at the county trying to deal with these systems that are really old a lot of times.
Yes.
And data input by hand, so there's errors and these huge databases. And it's a struggle, and it's something that we're actively working to improve at the county, at least in the planning department, and we're working with other departments as well to try to get some improve the way we collect data, the way we record data, and the way we access data, and then also the way we present the data to people.
Right.
So, you know, all these things are number one on our radar of improving, and we do actively work to improve that every day.
Well, I think it's great that this report is kind of a model of how to do some of the things better. It's great. You are listening to Central Coast Voices on 90.1 San Luis Obispo, at 89.5 Santa Barbara, 91.7 Paso Robles to Salinas, 90.9 Santa Ynez, Avila Beach, Cambria, 91.1 Cayucas, and 95.1 Lompoc. A reminder that This American Life with Ira Glass follows at 2 p.m. today. Also a reminder, you can now like us on Facebook at KCBX FM. And the voices you're hearing with me today are Janice Fong-Wolf and Jeff Legato. We've been talking about Vital Signs, the newest data report from the Community Foundation, SLO County, and Action for Healthy Communities. We have about 10 minutes left in this show, probably time for maybe one more call. If you want to bring your voice to the conversation, at 781-3875. So, you know, since we've got that time, you guys, what do you really want to make sure that we get out there today about this report? Janice.
Yeah, I think one of the things that, this got started by a lot of nonprofits and also working with government partners. But I think that we want to make sure that folks know that this is totally information for the community.
Yeah.
And I love, you know, Giselle's call.
Giselle's
because
perfect.
She was a perfect example. We really want it out there. We want to make it very accessible. And we do want to improve over time. Also, I think the issue around the data collection, you know, as much as it is a struggle and you know, how accurate is the data that we're collecting from other sources, one of the things that I get reminded by each time with the contractors that we work with who do this all over the nation is that even though there may be some errors in the data, when you're looking at it from a trend standpoint,
mm-hmm.
that really is very powerful and helpful information.
Yes.
So that's, I think, the thing that I love most about this is being able to consistently look at the same data points over time. And we are very careful about what we include in the report so that it is something that we can track over time rather than, you know, sort of random bits of data and then we can't follow up on it.
Right.
So there's a limitation about what's in the report. But as we were saying earlier with the folios, we're able to maybe highlight something specifically and then dig deeper and get some additional mm-hmm. information
right.
and tell that story.
Right. Jeff.
Yeah.
What? Hello,
yeah.
Jeff.
Hello.
It's like I just woke
Let
you
me
up.
Let me work through the tabs here. Hold on.
You've got way too many tabs for this show, Jeff. But what do you want to make sure that, you know, is there something in your tabs that you really felt like something you want to make sure that we talk about?
Highlight some more data?
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's all kind. I find all this stuff really interesting.
You must. It's your career.
It is. Yeah. No, I don't. You know, what I would want to make sure people understood is that, you know, this report doesn't have an agenda. There's no
good
bias
point.
From that perspective. These are random.
You're not
calls.
Trying to have an outcome that you're proving.
Yeah, we're not trying to force anything or make something happen or whatnot. This is just strictly you know, a report on how people are feeling within the county. And it's from that perspective, I think it's, you know, really fascinating. It gives kind of a really nice view because, you know, you may have these perceptions of how things are and your beliefs and whatnot. But if you see it here on the, in the data that, oh, well, that's interesting. It's not what I thought. Or, you know, something like just realize that it's there's no hidden agenda or anything. It's just a, you know, just a survey.
It's just information.
Yeah, it's just information. We don't have an agenda or anything.
Well,
like
I think
that.
It's really important too. I mean, the reason I'm thrilled about starting the year in shows for Central Coast Voices with this is that this data, actually, these reports, are what this show is about. We use the data from the Action Report previously, mm-hmm. and now we're using it from the Vital Signs Report. And it is the Community Foundation, Slo County, that is, you know, that brings this show to the airwaves with KCBX. And what we do with that is really highlight different points that we're finding in the data about maybe issues, maybe concerns, or maybe things that we're doing well and looking at in the community, what are the resources that have been contributing mm-hmm. to doing that well that have helped our community stay healthy and strong in those areas?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and this is Janice. I wanted to maybe just highlight some of the good things, just as you were saying, that, you know, we're not only looking at the deficits and where we need to improve. Certainly this information helps in that and guides folks. But, you know, there's a lot of things that are really positive that are coming out of this report as well. You know, some of the things that we've noted is that definitely it's evidence that the economy is recovering, that mm-hmm. we have regained the number of jobs that we had lost during the recession, and that there has been this growth. And so that's really wonderful to see that residents are self-reporting that they are feeling better off economically than they did the year before. Mm-hmm. There's been about a 10% increase in that response. And then also that obviously unemployment is going down too. Mm-hmm. The students in our community are performing better. We've had improvement, as I was talking before, about in the language arts proficiency. Also, the graduation rate is increasing, and we are higher than the state average for graduation rates from our local schools.
That's important.
That is awesome. Yeah. That is awesome. And then physical activity and, you know, children eating fruits and vegetables.
Right.
All of that has improved over time. And I think we can credit, you know, the local coalitions that are working on these issues and educating the community and the public at large of why these are important. And so that's improving our overall community health, actual physical health.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So those are all positive things that are happening locally. And the last thing I would add is just from the foundation's perspective, we see very strong charitable intent in our community. We have over 80% of our population have at some time in the prior year made a contribution to a local nonprofit, and we love seeing that. And about almost 50% volunteer in some way with a local nonprofit.
Yeah, and that's really what makes this community a community and unique.
Yes,
so that's
absolutely
fantastic. Jeff, if people want to access this report online real quickly,
actionslo.org would be the place to go.
All right. And Janice, if they can't access it online, want to get a copy or talk to you, how do they get?
Certainly, they can just contact us at the Community Foundation. It's 543-2323.
Okay. Thank you to my guest, Janice Fallon-Wolf, Director of Grants and Programs for the Community Foundation, Slo County, and to Jeff Legato, Mapping and Graphic Specialist for Slo County Planning Department, and mm-hmm. also a member of Action for Healthy Communities. Central Coast Voices is sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities in collaboration with KCBX. This show addresses today's concerns in our community, how today's choices affect tomorrow's community, and resources available. Suggestions for future show topics can be sent to us at voices@kcbx.org. Thank you for joining us today. Join Fred Monroe next week for another show on Central Coast Voices.